This month across the country, the spotlight is on the keepers of history. Our state archives holds an array of treasures, and this weekend a free lecture is being held at the State Capitol Auditorium about reclaiming King David Kalākaua. It will include a talk with Tiffany Ng, who wrote a book about the monarch based on Hawaiian language resources. What did Hawaiians really think about the monarch's world travels? We also sat down with Ron Williams, archivist and history professor, about the importance of acknowledging the whole story.
There's actually been almost a revolution in Hawaiian history, and the reason behind that is Hawaiian language. A lot of the history that we look at in the 19th century, the things that were produced came in Hawaiian language. Now, Hawaiian language was taken out of the schools in 1896 by law, because of economic reasons and social reasons, kind of fell by the wayside by the 1920s and 30s. So there were very few speakers by the 40s and 50s and 60s. And so over the last century, we've had a history of Hawaii written from folks who kind of couldn't access those native voices. That's changing. Ever since the 1970s, 1980s, we have more speakers, and folks kind of not necessarily trusting what the history is before. Nowadays we have everything about fake news and all of that. Folks are starting to say, well, what do the actual records say? And that's where the archives come in. The Hawaiian language newspapers were kind of a starting point. Those have been digitized and placed online, so we're getting access to Hawaiians from all over Hawaii in that period. But now we also, in the archives, we have things like government documents. We have, the Privy Council, the Department of the Interior. If you think about a district judge in Hilo in 1870, well, he spoke Hawaiian, right? And so those materials are in Hawaiian. So where we've had a story about Hawaii for about 100 years, now we're getting a story from Hawaiians about Hawaii, yeah.
To by and about.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the really neat thing is that I've seen so many books come out of going back to the original sources. And Tiffany, you just completed a book doing just that.
Reclaiming Kalākaua, 19th Century Perspectives on a Hawaiian Sovereign is based on English and Hawaiian language resources, newspapers, letters, books, travel logs, other materials published, materials found in Hawaii State Archives that will offer a completely different and more nuanced story of, in this case, David Kalākaua. If you want to know what his own people thought about him, if you want to know what Americans thought of him as he traveled to the U.S. in 1874 and 5, and if you want to know what people all over the world thought of him when he circumnavigated the globe, becoming the first sovereign to do so in 1881, this book would tell you, because currently there's been a reclamation of land on the part of the Kanaka Maoli's community. And this book sits right in that dialogue, in that it's a reclamation or it's a recovering or a reassertion of the character of David Kalākaua based on Native Hawaiian language resources.
I think that's the exciting thing, right, is that folks then have a new resource to go to. I mean, the treasures that you have at the State Archives really are a jumping off point for a lot of authors.
Right, and it's a very simple argument we're making. It sometimes gets put into the realm of politics because history can be political, but it's really not it's a historical argument. You have 10 witnesses to an event. You've gone and taken the story from one and walked away and written the history. Now we're accessing those other 9 folks and saying there's more complicated, there's a wider history here. Dr. Ng talked about Kalākaua. A very simple example is the building of Iolani Palace. When Iolani Palace was constructed, the English language press, now understand that in that period, in the 1880s, the English language press was the foreign press of Honolulu. And they cite themselves as that, right? So when you talk about newspapers like the Pacific Commercial Advertiser, you're talking about a foreign language newspaper in Hawaii. But yet that resource is the resource that we've used to understand that period. So if you look at books that are on the shelf or in the library today, and you go through the bibliography, they're almost solely from English language newspapers and those types of sources. So you see stories of the building of Iolani Palace that talk about the extravagance and that talk about Kalākaua built this thing because he had a huge ego and he wanted a big palace and so forth. And that's a story we've always known. I have a PhD in Hawaiian history. My first Hawaiian history course was taken at Maui Community College in 2001, and our textbook was Gavin Dawes's The Shoal of Time. And that book told me that Kalakaua was a spendthrift, that he was a drunk, that he liked to party, that he had, and that's what I learned about him. Well, when you go back and read the Hawaiian language documents and say, what were Hawaiians saying about the palace? They talk about the palace as architectural testimony to nationhood. They say, you cannot come to Hawaii and not understand that we are a sovereign, independent nation. And so Kalakaua was defending his nation, was placing his nation, at the forefront of kind of world politics and world understandings by building that palace. That's how Hawaiians saw it, but we never heard that story. So Dr. Ng's book, takes that story and many, many others and kind of says, here's what his own folks thought about him.
So those voices were subdued.
Right.
They were kept down there, and maybe some of those, if there were inaccuracies, were repeated for a long period of time. So what was the most exciting thing that you came across when you were doing your research for the book, you think?
Just one. let's see. It has to be just a knowledge of how rich that, what Ron was talking about, that a Hawaiian 19th century newspaper archive is. To get a sense of what his own people felt about him, again, is a voice that, just as you said, that has been suppressed for hundreds of years. And to read about the way that the people received him whenever he visited them, to read about the pride that they took in the way that he was received by other world leaders on his 1881 trip, to get a sense of, in the midst of all that was happening locally in Hawaii at that time, maybe the smallpox epidemic in 1881, the kind of loss of land and population, of nationhood, that struggle to hold on to who they were and what they still possessed. In the midst of that, to know the kind of pride and aloha and the loyalty and the support that they still held on to for Kalakaua and for the other Ali'i Nui or the other Mo'i or kings and queens and princes and princesses of Hawaii. The idea that they still believed in a sense of an independent nation that would thrive and that would persevere. I think that's one of the most important ideas that I took away from the Hawaiian language newspapers.
And then we are just coming off of that great exhibit that the Honolulu Museum put on about Kalakaua's world travels. And I think that was a real eye-opener for a lot of people to be able to see what a world leader he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really was. And I think it started that conversation. Dr. Ng's book is kind of furthering that. But this idea of the place of Hawaii in the world. One of the projects that I've been working on recently, and we talk about the Hawaii State Archives and the importance of the Hawaiian language documents, but the English language documents that haven't been accessed also. So from the archives point of view, we're trying to say these public records that we hold in trust for the people have stories to tell that no one's heard. Going back into that period of Kalakaua and looking at the opening of consulates and embassies overseas, for a long time we had understood that, yes, there were Hawaiian Kingdom embassies and consulates, and I've seen quotes of dozens, I've seen an estimate of 40, I've seen an estimate of 60, and so forth. And so about a year ago, myself and another archivist went and started to access those. So we have the foreign correspondences that were coming back from those consulates to Hawaii. And the database that I've created so far has 136. So during the Hawaiian Kingdom, 1843 to 1893, there were 136 foreign consulates around the world. On six continents. And to know that the Hawaiian Kingdom had a consulate in Pretoria, South Africa, in San Francisco, California, in Germany, in Australia, gives you an idea of how Kalakaua and other Mo'i were setting Hawaii at the forefront of the diplomatic scene. They were progressive. We talk about understanding how that Hawaiian Kingdom, stood in the world. The 1852 Constitution for the Kingdom of Hawaii offers universal manhood suffrage. That's something that's just starting to people are talking about. Well, in 10 years later, a decade after that, in the 1860s, the United States is fighting a civil war, 600,000 of its own people being killed over whether or not to own black people. A decade prior, in the Kingdom of Hawaii, a black person could own property, vote, and become a citizen, as any race could. So this understanding now of Hawaii as a progressive, as one of the most progressive modern nation states in the world, comes about because of the work of Kalakaua and other mo'i, and those are the types of stories that are starting to be discovered in the archives.
So we can't let that history stay hidden or stay suppressed.
I think just based on what Ron is talking about, we see from the Hawaii State Archives that collection on the letters that the king wrote home during that 1881 trip around the world, present that trip and Kalakaua in a more nuanced and more complete understanding. For example, you know, there's so much talk, or there was so much talk about the expense or the cost of that trip and other ventures that Kalakaua took part in, the palace and coronation and so on. And yet, when I went through those letters in the archives from that trip, he was always concerned about cost, and he was trying to find ways out of his own pocket to cover those expenses. You know, and that idea alone it really changes how we understand Kalakaua. Also, the very idea that 1881 circumnavigation of the globe, it was a business trip, you know, and it wasn't this carefree kind of like just, you know, traveling and touring the world, but that in every destination that he stopped in, he had a plan laid out, you know, to meet an official here, you know, a leader there, and to really determine how to best take the problems in Hawaii and to solve them, whether it was immigration or leprosy, you know, needing laborers for the plantations, but that he met with all of these people. He was very methodic in his organization and his plan, and he used his time wisely. In fact, he probably overexerted himself on that business trip. But that alone, like to take a look at that trip and to see it for what it really was, and to see him as a well-organized and brilliant and very articulate, eloquent, very social, you know, king. I mean, that's what the Hawaii State Archives, those kinds of publications there can do for your own research. One interesting thing that I found was that when he was in Japan, he actually met with Dr. Shobun Goto, who was a world-renowned leprosy doctor. He was known for what he was, how he could heal the lepers in Japan, and Kalakaua made it a point to visit with him and finally brought him to Kakaako in 1886, and he was able to work with patients there. And so, again, that idea that he was always working for the betterment of his kingdom.
So it talks about his compassion.
Exactly.
And always looking for out for his people and what he could find across the globe, I guess.
Right. You know, there was a story that I read that talks about, you know, his trip, his final trip to San Francisco, where he passes in San Francisco. You know, we know that he went to San Francisco and that's where he died. But in investigating that trip, you find out that, well, he went to Southern California first. And so he arrived in San Francisco, took a train down to San Diego, and then came back. But while he's in San Diego, he's there for 3 days. And while he's in San Diego, he takes a tour of the Sweetwater Dam. There was a dam built down near the border that was the most technologically advanced dam in the world. And so he wants to see that. He wants to understand these things that are happening, these things that are, you know, water production and so forth. He ends up taking a train into Tijuana. So he goes down into Mexico. But those types of, you know, him looking for the newest technology, the things that can kind of help his nation, kind of recast that story.
So that's, I guess, something that you folks are going to kind of spotlight at this event.
Yeah. So Dr. Ng's book is, she's going to talk about her book. We're actually going to bring a little pop-up exhibit. We'll have two cases there of materials from his 1881 trip around the globe. So we'll have a couple of the royal orders that he received. We'll have some of the letters and correspondences that he wrote and so forth. Actually, the State Archives doesn't have an exhibit space. So unfortunately, most of our stuff, you know, stays behind, back in the vault. And because of the issue of provenance, we cannot loan things out. So, you know, if we do take something out, it's got a couple of guards with it at all times and so forth. But yeah, so these are things that most people have never seen.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, looking forward to it. Mahalo. But thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
That was Ron Williams and Tiffany Ng talking about an upcoming free weekend event at the State Capitol Auditorium. It is this Saturday from 2 to 3:30. It's a nod to National Archives Month, and Neighbor Islanders should know the event will be live streamed on the Archives' new Facebook page. Ng's book will be available October 30th.